Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Gareth Greenaway joins us. We're going to be talking about HubbleStack, which is a way to monitor thousands or tens of thousands of machines. Adobe uses it, and they're providing it to you. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Gareth Greenaway. Episode 485, recorded May 23rd, 2018, HubbleStack. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at SunEdge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you might want to download right after this show and play with. Don't do that while you're in your car. Wait till you get home, okay? So if you're listening to this in your car, not a good idea to start playing with any of the software we're talking about. It's just not good. So I am currently in Santa Monica. I'll go ahead and bring on our co-host first, Gareth Greenaway. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Randall. Thanks for having me back.
It's been sort of infrequent. I know you've been busy with a lot of other projects, but this one in particular you said would be appropriate to your area. Oh, but before we do that, I believe you're in your secret bunker in Thousand Oaks?
I am once again in my secret bunker in Thousand Oaks, yes.
All right, cool. And I was just starting to say this at the beginning of the show, but I figured let's bring Gareth on so I have somebody to talk to about this. I am sitting in the 11th floor. In a room called Malibu. My biggest client right now is ZipRecruiter. And this will be the very last time, if you're watching the video, this will be the very last time you get to see this shot. Because between now and the next time I'm taping at ZipRecruiter, which will be about a month from now, we're actually moving the whole company to a place that only has three floors. So we'll never see an 11th floor view anymore. And hopefully the conference rooms there have windows. So at least you have see something out the window. But this is the last, very, very last time I'm going to be doing it from this particular building at 401 Wilshire. We're moving entirely out of 401 Wilshire, which is a good thing too, because for the next 6 months, there's construction happening on the first and second floors. And we can hear it on the 11th floor. It's that noisy. So I'm glad we're getting out of here. So anyway, so today's show is interesting. Today's show, well, all the shows we do are interesting. That doesn't even go without qualifying, right? HubbleStack. HubbleStack is, where's my notes? I hid my notes. That was stupid. HubbleStack is a modular open source security compliance framework. The project provides on-demand profile-based auditing, real-time security event notifications, automated remediation, alerting, and reporting. I think I just won buzzword bingo here. Our guest today is Colton Myers, who was the co-creator of HubbleStack and is now the primary developer. And he's also done core contributor to SaltStack and was previously on the SaltStack core engineering team. And he's a full-time Python developer. Well, I guess I know what his favorite scripting language is going to be. That's what we got for him. So, Gareth, what do you know about HubbleStack?
Yeah, I mean, you summed it up fairly well. I've been following it for a couple years, ever since its inception. Mostly because it's based on a project that's has a huge interest in, to me, SaltStack. Okay. So yeah, I know it's used for security and used for compliance, and it's. Which is a really a hot topic the last couple of years, especially with all the recent security related issues that have popped up.
Well, and when this project or when this yeah when this project yeah project when this when this show was booked, it reminded me immediately of the show we did back in April of OWASP Dependency Track, which also has a similar sort of goal of being able to audit everything that you have installed and watch for security issues, things like that. So we'll have to see if our guest can give us a bit of contrast if he's familiar with that project. I should have actually told him to go check that out if he doesn't already, but maybe he does. Maybe he already knows it as being a competitor to what's going on here. Anything else before we get started?
No, I mean, I'm anxious to talk to Colton and see what's happening lately with HubbleStack.
Okay, well, before we do that, though, before we bring Colton on, we have to remind everyone that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated, and it needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's also powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. That's rocketmortgage.com/FLOSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Floss Weekly. And let's go ahead and bring on Colton. Colton, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm actually in Seattle. I've been up here the last couple days for a conference called Deconstruct. It's a no-sponsor, single-track programming-based conference that was actually really, really good. So I recommend people check it out next year.
Cool. Well, wave in your general direction, then. It's somewhere over there, but a couple states away. So since I'm in Santa Monica, so be like that.
We're just going to hope that the internet holds up. So.
Okay. Well, crossing my fingers, that's always a good thing to check on. All right. So, and luckily, ZipRecruiter has huge amounts of bandwidth, and so as long as it runs at all, it'll be running quickly, and I won't have too many dropouts and stuff. Anyway, so give us a 30,000-foot view. When somebody is looking at HubbleStack, starting to use it, what problem are they trying to solve?
So, you know, we all know that our infrastructures have continued to get more and more complex as more and more of the software that we write is distributed across thousands or hundreds of thousands of nodes. And as that infrastructure gets more and more complex, it's harder to get a real view of the security status of all of our nodes and to spot problems before they're big problems. And so, you know, we created HubbleStack to kind of help us, you know, look into that galaxy of complexity. You know, we joke with the space metaphors over here. It's just like the space telescope. We can look into those depths of our infrastructure and pull out the information that we need to keep ourselves secure.
And just to give you an example from a personal example, because I'm at ZipRecruiter, we're using something like, 300 or 400 AWS machines. We've got probably about 20 different technology stacks, Python and Perl and Apache and Node.js and a bunch of other stuff, Java, even in some of the places. We even had Windows machines in there for a while, but thank God we finally replaced that code so we wouldn't have to run a Windows in the cloud. So how did this get started, though? It sounds like you've been with it since the beginning.
Yeah, so I actually this is a project that is sponsored and I guess I don't know the official branding terms, but anyway, I work for Adobe and I was hired at Adobe to do this project. So Adobe hosts this open source project, and it's Apache 2 licensed. And basically, we had some issues with an existing vendor that we were using for some of our auditing. We weren't super happy with their product, and it was very expensive. And so Krister Edwards, who is the other co-founder of Hubble, is a big Salt Stack fan, and I was working for Salt at the time. And he figured that we could use Salt, which allows us to abstract away so many of the details of the operating systems on our hosts. We could use Salt and build on top of Salt this auditing system and monitoring system. And it turned out that it was really good. And so at Adobe, you know, it quickly became, it went from a proof of concept to, oh, we need to deploy this everywhere tomorrow very quickly. So it's been kind of a wild ride. But yeah, so I work full-time at Adobe, and basically all my time there is spent on HubbleStack. So that's kind of how it started.
One of the great things I know about Salt, I don't know a lot about Salt. They use it here. I mean, like I said, we have many, many technologies that are in play right here. But it's very extensible. You can write your own modules, deploy your own modules, and also use Salt's ability to query down, okay, give me all the hosts in our East Coast data center that are running this flavor of Linux, and then apply the test to that. Is that part of how this came about?
Yeah, and the really interesting thing about Adobe is made up of many disparate teams that have come into Adobe through acquisitions over the years, like many big companies. And so, you know, just like ZipRecruiter, we have, you know, lots of different technology stacks and lots of different infrastructures. We do still have Windows, and Hubble does run on Windows. And so we needed something that could run everywhere and, you know, send all that information back to a central place. In the end, it turned out, you know, once this went Adobe wide, we realized that we couldn't necessarily require all teams to deploy Salt Stack, because, you know, some teams were using Chef or Puppet or Ansible. You know, we haven't standardized those tools across Adobe, and so what we ended up doing was using Salt as a library. We actually just import Salt and use all of its, you know, abstraction tools and modular capabilities to do this without necessarily needing a Salt master and minion relationship. And then we send all of that data back to Splunk, which is a shared piece of technology that we use across the company. But Hubble also supports other less expensive solutions for the reporting end. So, yeah.
And how was the name Hubble chosen?
That's a really good question. I'm going to have to ask Krister. I think Krister was the one who kind of had the idea for this project, and I was just the implementer. And he wanted to see into his infrastructure. Like it really was just based on the Hubble telescope, and that's where, you know, we have a lot of different names for the internal pieces of Hubble, and they're all space themed. You know, Nova, Pulsar, all those things. So it's space from top to bottom.
And what are some of the things that Hubble reveals?
So Hubble, like I mentioned, has a couple of different components. The main one that most people use and want right off the bat is Nova, and that's our auditing piece. Nova allows you to audit your infrastructure for anything you want. It's a modular system just like in Salt, so we can write new modules that look for new things. And it's all success-failure based. So, for example, the primary one that we do is CIS compliance. So the Center for Internet Security publishes these compliance requirements, and they are a little bit difficult to work with, mostly because when they don't have a standardized way of referring to a given check. The headers for specific checks change across operating systems, and even sometimes across the same version of the CIS standard for the same operating system, which makes it a little bit nightmarish. And so, you know, we have pulled a lot of the major operating systems CIS documents, and we have encoded those checks in our Hubble data. And so you can basically use Hubble to check to see if you are compliant with all the level one scored checks in CIS. And so that's one big thing. So, you know, you can meet your compliance requirements for, you know, HIPAA, SHOC-2 with this tool. The second piece is Nebula. Nebula is the I've struggled to come up with how to frame Nebula, but it's the information gathering tool, just raw information. And the primary tool we use there is Facebook's OS query. It's an open source project which allows you to query your systems as if they were basically SQL databases. So you can write SQL that queries like the running processes on a host with all the information about a given running process. Established outbound connections is one of the queries that we have. And so we have a bunch of these queries that just basically gather huge amounts of data that we can then feed into our security model in Splunk and look for bad patterns. You know, new established outbound connections on hosts that shouldn't have them, or on ports that we don't expect, or, you know, whatever. Just all sorts of different issues there. You know, we can check for installed versions of software, whatever. We just collect the more data, the better, basically, and as long as we don't get our Splunk maintainers mad at us. But so that's really cool. And then the last piece is Pulsar, which is our file integrity monitoring. So we use iNotify on on Linux, and we use NTFS journaling on Windows to basically watch specific files and folders for changes. And so that's super valuable. You know, we watch, you know, Etsy and watch for changes in the sudoers file that we don't expect or whatever. And then all of that is routed to Splunk or Logstash or, you know, Slack even. You know, it's another modular system. And so we route all that data there, and we call that routing piece, that reporting piece, Quasar. And that just uses the returner system inside of Salt, for those who are familiar with Salt. So, yeah. So we don't do any of the analysis. We just report all the data to whatever system you want.
One of the things I didn't hear you say, but maybe you said it sort of indirectly, is monitoring CVEs and stuff to look for security issues.
Right. So we actually, right now at Adobe, we're using another vendor for that because that's an established process that has already been there. But Hubble does support that as well. We do our CVE monitoring through vulners.com. Okay. So you can, we have a couple of different versions of that. One where you can... Vulner's preference is you take your list of installed packages and send it to their API endpoint, and they tell you if you have any issues. That may not be ideal for all, you know, you may not trust them with that data. So you can actually, they have other APIs that allow you to download their list of CVEs and do it all, you know, locally, which is a little bit harder on them because you have to download all that data from them. But it is more secure. So yes, you can do CVE. We also have, I just lost it. There was an original version that used a different, it was OpenSCAP. We can also do CVEs through that, but that involves installing another tool. So it's a little bit more difficult. So we haven't used that very much.
Would this run alongside other monitoring tools, like things are watching for, say, high load averages and things like that? Or could you use this to do all that?
I guess you could potentially use this for that. At Adobe, we don't use it for any of those types of monitoring things. We run this alongside our Prometheus and all of our, you know, Nagios and our existing monitoring checks. So mostly we use this just for security data. But theoretically, you could use it to gather more of that data as well.
And if this does find something bad, whichever way you define bad, is this typically fed into something like PagerDuty or something to trigger immediate responses?
Yeah, so we have it. So like I mentioned before, we use Splunk, which is is not a great topic for Floss Weekly, I guess. It's not open source, but it is a great tool, but it's very expensive. But we feed it all into there, and we then generate alerts out of there and create tickets into the relevant team's Jira queue. That's the most common case. Our security operations team also, you know, can raise incidents if they find, you know, real, you know, not as a, you know, the automatically raising tickets is more for like the compliance requirements, right? But if we find an ongoing attack or something that we think is an attack, then the security operations team can wake up the people on call and get that going and looking into issues. So
okay, and what kind of, is this, if this is running continuous, what kind of a load is this putting on all the systems? Is it noticeable?
It's really light. It does have a little bit of a memory footprint, and that is, you know, it's very similar to a Salt Minion. Basically, what we've created for the version that just uses Salt as a library is a very stripped down Salt Minion. It has a very simple single pass scheduler, which basically can say, "Oh, I want to run my audits daily, and I want to run this set of OS query queries every 15 minutes and this set every hour." And, you know, when it's actually running OS query, sometimes you can see a little bit of a load spike, but most of those queries take less than a second or two. And so usually it doesn't even show up on your graphs. And when it's not running anything, it's mostly sleeping. And so it has basically no load impact unless it's actually running an audit. And even then it's fairly lightweight.
How has the adoption been in other organizations?
So it's a little bit hard to tell. We don't have, you know, a good way to see if people are, have adopted Hubble. It's mostly word of mouth. I meet people, you know, I met people at, when I was down at Scale. I meet people at meetups, you know, locally, and we hear about, users using Hubble, you know, just when we're out, you know, at other Adobe offices or whatever, we hear, oh, I heard so-and-so is using Hubble. The problem is a lot of those are just, you know, silent consumers so far. We haven't, and that's partially my fault. We haven't spent a lot of time building the community, you know, having meetups, not sponsoring, but booths at conferences. We had one at Scale. That was one of our first ones where we were able to have a booth. And we really want to build that community, but due to the wild ride that I was mentioning before at Adobe, with how quickly this rolled out, I haven't been able to spend as much time on the open source community as I would like. So, ideally we want to turn all of those users into contributors, so we can get more audits, more up-to-date audits. You know, right now we mostly have focused on, you know, CIS, level one scored, which I'm not going to go into, like, it's a subset of CIS basically. Cause not everybody will, follow all of CIS because it's a little bit, difficult. It's a little bit inconvenient. So we definitely want more contributors, and as we build that open source community, I'm hoping to, you know, find out more of the ways that Hubble is being used and be able to get a better idea of how many users we have and that kind of thing.
As far as the current contributors that Hubble Stack has, what does that look like today? Is it primarily people within Adobe, or are people actually contributing from outside?
Mostly it's people from inside of Adobe. We probably have about a third of the contributors. You know, we have 21 contributors, so far, to the actual, Hubble Stack / Hubble repo, and about a third of them are not at Adobe. So we're getting there. But you know, I think we've done a pretty good job of establishing the baseline needs that a user would need. And so, you know, it's pretty easy to pick up Hubble and just start using it without ever, you know, needing to contribute back. So
currently Hubble Stack, at least in its current iteration, is based on Salt Stack. If someone wanted to jump into it today, you mentioned like using it inside Adobe, like there's other teams are using other tools, and you didn't want to insist that they use Salt Stack. But if someone wanted to get started with Hubble Stack today, do they need how do they get started? What do they need in place to get started?
We have the original version that is built directly on Salt and designed to be basically deployed as a series of custom Salt modules. That one is called Hubble-Salt, in our Hubble Stack org on GitHub. And that one, basically, you just add it as a GitFS remote inside of Salt. You do a saltutil.syncall to get all the modules down. And then you put either a Salt schedule or a cron job in place to actually get those running. And those instructions are over there. The one that most people are using now is Hubble, which just uses Salt as a library. And that one we have, because of the vast differences in our infrastructure, being able to deploy it easily was a must. And so we use a tool called PyInstaller, which basically allows you to package your Python application. It's almost like a statically linked compiled binary. It basically includes the Python instance. It includes all of the libraries that you need, all in basically a single directory, so that you can just plop it down, run it there, and it won't interfere with or require any changes to an existing Python install on a host. It won't mess with anything. And we actually include OS query in that. We build and include OS query in our packages as well. So basically all you need to do is go to our release page, download the package for the system that you're on, and it will just install everything in one little directory and install a system service so that you can, you know, just get started right away. You'll have to, you know, choose which scheduled jobs in the config that you want to, but basically you install it, you set up your config, and you're done.
So basing Hubble Stack on SaltStack, particularly the one Hubble where it uses it as a library, uses it as a library. How do you deal with the fact that, like, so a project like SaltStack is constantly moving, constantly changing? How do you ensure that Hubble, you can guarantee that Hubble is working with the version that you've based it on?
I mean, that's another nice thing about the fact that we built the way we build our packages is obviously it does not, you know, once it pulls in that SaltStack version, you're done, at least for that package, right? We have had some issues in the most recent, mostly we've had very few issues with Salt, you know, breaking things that we use. One of them was when Salt 2017.7 came out, and I was subclassing the loader inside of Salt, which was maybe a silly decision on my part because it's really not a public API. And one of the function signatures changed, and so, you know, it broke, and it was pretty easy to fix. So what I ended up doing was actually just taking that specific loader piece that I had to actually change, and we just pulled that into Hubble. And so, you know, that's kind of been my strategy so far, is like stuff that it breaks, I maybe say, okay, well, I'm just going to pull that piece in because I don't need any of the new features that come in. But so far, it hasn't been that big of an issue. You know, with Salt 28, Salt is very good about being careful with their new versions and not breaking things, not breaking backwards compatibility and so forth. It can be a little bit frustrating, you know, when we do need to make those breaking changes, but there's a deprecation path. But, you know, with 2018.3, we moved a whole bunch of Salt util libraries to a different location. And while it still worked with the old version, if you move to the new version and not all of your minions are on the new version, then it breaks. And so there can be some growing pains, but for the most part, you know, we're just working on buffing up our testing so that we can catch those issues before we ever release a package, and either fix them or, you know, if all else fails, we may, you know, pin to an older version of Salt. Obviously that comes with its own issues, you know, and if Salt has a security fix that, you know, and we're on an old unsupported version, that could be an issue. But as of right now, it hasn't so far. And so we're kind of taking it as it goes, but as of right now, Salt is treating us really well, with their main maintenance, process. So it hasn't been an issue.
So kind of along those lines, I mean, what is the future for Hubble hold? Do you see it always being based and using Salt as a library, or at some point will it venture off and do its own thing and not rely on another project for its kind of innards?
I've considered, so we use a subset of Salt's functionality, right? We don't necessarily need all of the other stuff that's in there. And so theoretically, Salt is Apache 2, and we could pull out the pieces that we need, use those, and just include them in Hubble, and then just be done with it. That's also a fair amount of work, and so we haven't done anything like that so far. We definitely value the OS abstractions that Salt gives us, right? You know, Salt has a vested interest in making sure that it works with all of the latest changes in, you know, CentOS. You know, when CentOS 8 comes out, you know, if there are changes there that break existing Salt stuff, Salt handles that, and we don't have to deal with it, right? So there are real advantages to relying on a project like Salt. There, you know, every once in a while we have had breakage, and so that's an issue that we have to deal with as well. So as of right now, I don't see us migrating away because it's just Salt gives us so many easy wins. But, you know, in the future, if we run into issues, then who knows? But as of right now, I love Salt and we're staying there.
So given that you work for Adobe, and majority of the contributors to the project, Krister works at Adobe, how has Adobe been with Hubble's development and the fact that it's open source? Have they been fairly hands-off, letting you kind of do your thing, or has there been some direction from the company?
I mean, we write Hubble with our needs in mind, right? Like that's you know, that's where the direction comes from, is, oh, our security team needs to do this thing, so we're going to write this new feature to help them do that thing. And that feature is going to help the community as well, but we definitely have to put our needs first in terms of, like, you know, when I'm working on Hubble on Adobe's dime, on Adobe's time, you know, I put Adobe's needs first. But they've actually been really good. Adobe is really, really working hard to get more involved with open source projects, to, you know, play better with open source. You know, a lot of people don't realize that Adobe does open source. We have a whole internal committee dedicated to open source. We do have an org on GitHub. Hubble is not under that org, just because we have multiple repos and so forth. But we're definitely like open source at Adobe is definitely here to stay. They're maybe not as good at it yet as, you know, Google and Microsoft and these companies who are kind of killing it in the open source space. But we're working there, and we have, you know, multiple internal open source conferences every year to talk about, you know, inner sourcing projects and as well as open sourcing projects. And all of that is leading to, I think, a positive impact from Adobe on the open source community.
Well, I'm going to channel Simon Phipps for a second here and ask if the public Git repo is where you're doing your live work, or whether you have some sort of filter that you have to get approval by a committee to release things.
It's all completely on the open repo. We do have some issues with, like, oh, I have to use Jira for my sprints, right? And that's not open. So I'm trying to, like, keep that in sync with the issues on GitHub. But yeah, we have an internal – we use GitHub Enterprise at Adobe. And so I have an internal mirror of the repo just in case we need to hit it internally from our data center or whatever. The vast majority of everything just goes straight into GitHub. The one exception is that we have our Hubble Stack data repo, which is basically what Hubble Stack will pull from to find the profiles, to find those CIS checks, to find, you know, all that different stuff. And we have that open source version, and that has the vast majority of the data that we collect at Adobe. But then we also have an internal repo that merges with that, basically, which has some additional file integrity monitoring checks and some additional queries that are Adobe specific that, you know, it wouldn't be terrible if an attacker knew what we were watching, but we'd prefer them not to, right? We don't want to say, hey, this is everything we're looking for with Hubble. And so, you know, you can just figure out how to slide right around what we're watching for and be undetected. So that's the one exception, is that, you know, we do have some additional data that we collect that is not public. So
do you have some models of that kind of stuff so people can get started in their own organization doing the same sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we have tons of stuff that's open source. We have, like, I think right now we have maybe 15 or 20 OS query queries that are in there, and we only have like two that are internal only, and then we have, you know, most of our paths, you know, all of the normal Etsy stuff that you're watching for and all that stuff is all open source. So it's really easy to pull that and say, I want to watch these additional directories. And then you can just follow that same model. So it's definitely there and easy to do your organization specific things.
Now, I don't know a lot about Salt, except that it's being used here. How well does that play with auto-scaling services?
The biggest issue there is key management. Salt has an API that you can programmatically accept or delete keys. Unless something has changed recently, there wasn't like a really good like plug and play. Oh, you're on Amazon, then all you need to do is click the switch and it will just all of a sudden work with Amazon auto scaling in Salt. Gareth might know more than me, since I think he's he works more with Salt lately than I do, but so that's been one issue, and so, you know, that's why some of our teams who do a lot of auto scaling aren't using Salt. A lot of those teams are using, you know, they're not actually using central management tools so much as they're almost, you know, a lot of auto scaling now almost takes the Docker model, right? Rather than trying to fix something, you just burn it down and make a new one, and so we just bake Hubble into those images and it runs just fine. But as far as Salt, those teams aren't generally using Salt, at least in Adobe.
And so the new saltless Hubble stuff, is that going to work? Oh wait, you said you're going to bake it into the Docker images anyway.
We just bake it right into the image, and that's how that goes. Docker is a little bit harder because, you know, you don't really want to bake a Salt minion effectively assault minion into your Docker image, just because it's a little bit of a bigger memory footprint when you're talking about like a microservices situation. And so we're still trying to figure out what our strategy is when it comes to containerization. Mostly, you know, we definitely have Hubble installed on the hosts. You know, we have a CoreOS package. I'm going to use air quotes because CoreOS does not have a package management system, but we have a self-extracting tar file that allows us to install Hubble on CoreOS and collect all that same information. And OS Query continues to just kill it with their new features, and they have ways that we can like query into running Docker containers and so forth. We're trying to figure out our strategy when it comes to auditing those containers. Our current strategy is mostly to do the scan on the image itself at image creation time, rather than ongoing scanning inside of the container, because again, it's not lightweight enough for that. So we definitely, that's some place that we could improve. And so, you know, if people look at Hubble and they think it's really cool and they have cool ideas for how to handle containerization, I would love to hear them, and we'd love to hear from you.
Well, as you heard at the top of the show, we had OWASP dependency track on Floss back in April. Is that something you're familiar with?
So I'm not. I heard you talking about that.
Should have warned you. Sorry.
I was trying to Google it really quick, but then I lost the. Yeah, it didn't happen. Nope. So I'm not familiar with it.
Well, but there are other players in this space, though, right? I mean, this is not a unique project yet.
No, and I think, you know, we have a fairly unique thing in that, you know, there are a lot of vendors who want to sell you a tool for this. Fewer of them are open source. And I'm a big fan of open source security software. Black box security software is just, I don't know, it just doesn't work very well with my brain and security. I want to be able to look at it and know what it's doing. But it is really hard because people also need to get paid, right? So we're blessed that we are able to work for Adobe, and that it's not, you know, this wasn't in Adobe's domain. Adobe doesn't have a need to sell this product, so we were able to open source it, which is really advantageous, I think.
And I don't remember the exact name of the project now, but about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago on Floss Weekly, we interviewed some organization that was building software that would actually do Docker image static analysis before they even got deployed. So I don't know, maybe you can leverage off that. Maybe I can figure it out after the show.
Yeah, I'm going to go find that episode and talk about and look at that, because that sounds really cool. It's a really interesting push and pull kind of a relationship, because, you know, just recently CIS, the Center for Internet Security, now has a paid product that will do CIS checks. And in my brain, I'm like, oh, that's why you made it so difficult to track these changes across versions, so that we'd have to pay you for it. But it's frustrating. But I think we made a pretty good contender in the space. So,
you know, when I was at Scale this year, did I meet you?
I'm not sure. I think maybe you talked to Krister, but I don't. I think I must have been somewhere else at the time.
I think it was Krister, right? But I remember. So I was trying to remember why this sounded so familiar, and I went, "Oh yeah, it's one of the ones that I nailed at Scale." So I always appreciate that. It's kind of fun. Has Hubble Stack been able to find upstream problems with Salt Stack and contributed back?
Yeah, we actually so. Originally, we were using GitHub as the source for our profiles. It turns out when you point 100,000 hosts at a GitHub repo, GitHub gets mad. They didn't get mad. Mm-hmm. They were actually very cool about it. But we did hit some rate limiting issues, and they were very cool about it. And we fixed some initial timing issues with the way we were pulling down our data. But we realized that relying on GitHub for this data maybe wasn't the best model. And so we started talking about, you know, where to put that data, and we thought about using Azure Blob Storage. Adobe does a lot of work with and has a big partnership with Microsoft, but there were some issues there, so we ended up going to S3. So, but between all of those changes, I did find a couple of issues with the Salt file server modules for Azure and S3. The Azure one was completely broken because Azure is a young system, and their APIs have changed a lot over the last 5 years. And so, you know, it was based on an old version that just didn't work anymore. So I was able to update that. And now the Azure FS support in Salt Stack is great again. And then we ended up because we ended up using S3, I did find one bug in their S3FS about ordering of buckets, and I was able to submit a fix upstream for that. So we've definitely been able to submit back upstream to Hub or to SaltStack, which has been really great, and I think they've appreciated it as well.
Okay, and also, I saw pull requests in your repos. Do you expect and hope that people will participate in developing outside the company?
Yes, please. We love pull requests. Most of the pull requests that we've had have been just on the Hubble Stack data. You know, people have said, "Oh, you have this issue in the Ubuntu 16.04." Audits that, you know, makes it so that it has this one false positive, and so they'll fix those issues, and that's awesome. We have had a couple of people submit fixes to the actual code, and that's also amazing. So yes, we love pull requests. We have on our, if you're interested in getting involved in open source, I think Hubble is a great project. It's fairly straightforward, and it's in Python, so it's a great place to start with open source. And we have a Slack org, Slack workspace, I guess they're calling them now, which you can join with the link on our website, hubblestack.io. So join us on Slack, ask questions, and we'd love to see pull requests and contributions.
Are the I forget what GitHub calls them, they're not PRs because it's pull request, problem tickets.
Issues.
There we go.
Issues is what they call them.
But I mean, issues, PR issues are also problem like, report. Yes.
No, I'm totally with you. Issues. Yeah. If you don't have time to contribute code or if you're not feeling confident there, we'd still love to see any issues that you find. We'd love to have had those pointed out, and you know we'll try to fix them as quickly as we can. So.
And people can also look at the issues and try to fix something for themselves too, right?
Certainly. We have a lot of issues in there. I need to be better about going through and we were going to run a sprint at PyCon last week, but I ended up being too busy and I didn't get prep work in ahead of time. But one of these days I'd really like to label a bunch of the issues as, okay, these are really good, like first contributor issues. These will be fairly straightforward to fix, and I just haven't gotten around to them yet. So watch for those labels when I eventually get them up, and those will be great. There's lots of issues. There are some issues that are more difficult, but there are a lot of issues in there that would be great for a first time contributor and would be a great place to start.
So if someone's using Hubble Stack currently and they see like a new version or a new component of Salt, say like a new returner or a new way of getting a new module for pulling information out, how easy is it to take that new component and drop it into Hubble Stack?
So unfortunately, we don't have, the same. You know, usually you would just drop that into, even if you weren't on the latest version of Salt, you would drop that into your, underscore grains folder for a grain, and you would just, use a salt util.syncall and all of your minions would get it and they'd start using it with their grains. It's a little bit more difficult with Hubble purely because there's just not a central authority, at least not for, Hubble. We've been calling it saltless Hubble, which is completely a misnomer because we definitely use Salt, but you just don't have to have Salt installed. But basically, in that case, you either need to, if it's included in Salt, then hopefully the next Hubble version, we will take that new version of Salt and it will just be included, right? But if it's not, then you have to plug it in via... I'm trying to think if you could use some of the Salt stuff if you put it into your Hubble Stack data, but I don't think so because I don't think I have. It's theoretically possible that if you put it into your repo that Hubble was pulling down at the normal place, underscore grains or whatever, and then you ran Hubble, saltutil.syncall, that it would work. But I've never tried that, so I have no idea. But if all else failed, you could totally just drop that file into place inside of your Hubble install. And as long as it doesn't have any new Python dependencies, because again, Hubble includes all the Python dependencies at build time. So if it includes a new Python dependency, that could cause issues. But if it's dependency-less, you could drop it into the existing Hubble directory inside of Hubble gets installed to /opt/Hubble. So it would be /opt/Hubble/Hubble-libs, and then you'd find Salt in there and you'd drop it into the correct directory. And because Salt loads dynamically, it would work. But it would not be super great. If you think something like that should be included in Hubble and it's not in upstream Salt, we could potentially include that because we use our Hubble modules are just Salt modules. So if you think that if you have a good use case for a module in Hubble that is not in upstream Salt, we could definitely include it in our repo. So just hit us up there. But otherwise, if it's in upstream Salt, you'll get it eventually.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, the reason I ask for the question is like that's one of the most powerful things of Salt is being able to write your own custom components and just drop them in. I was curious to see if that paradigm existed in Hubble Stack.
Yeah, we don't have a super good mechanism, but that's something that I think would be valuable. So I think that's something that we may look at in the future. For now, we'd love to, you know, unless it's like something very specific to your company, you know, if it's generalizable at all, we'd love to just see it in the repo because we'd love to give it to everybody else, right? That's kind of where we're at now. But if you have, you know, some use cases for custom stuff that's really only applicable to your company, come talk to me on Slack and we'll, you know, maybe, like I said, it might just work. I don't know. I just have never tried. So we can do some testing and if not, then we can maybe add something like that. So.
Cool. All right. My final question. In your personal information that was sent out in the show notes, you mentioned that you were a big fan of yo-yos.
I am. There was when Randall was asking for all of my information, in there said, add something, some color to have you stand out from the crowd. And I was like, well, I play with yo-yos and I'm an adult. So that's kind of weird, right? Turns out there's a huge, not huge, it's pretty small, but bigger than you'd think, yo-yo community in the U.S. and actually around the world. These days, yo-yos are high-end precision machined aluminum and with bearings inside, and they spin for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, no problem. And people are doing these crazy tricks with them. If you're interested in looking at that kind of stuff, just search for like the National Yo-Yo Contest on YouTube, and you can see videos of people just doing things that you just would have never thought was possible. I'm not very good, but I do dabble. So it's a pretty fun hobby.
And Emily the Strange, which is a frequent contributor to our chat room, mentioned that you could call that saltless Hubble, low sodium Hubble.
I like it. Low sodium.
Abbreviated to Loso Hub or Loso Who.
As of right now, we're just calling it Hubble versus Hubble, yeah. Salt, but that can be confusing sometimes. So.
Yes. How's the documentation? Could you use more people writing specs and stuff?
We definitely could. We have had. It was really, really bad for a while. I should be ashamed of myself. I am ashamed of myself. We put off the documentation for a long time just because it was so busy, and we have done better. The README on the Hubble repo is probably the best place. That has probably the best documentation. But we want to get our website a little bit more up to date with, you know, better documentation there, and we want to just add. We had some read the docs documentation. It's not up to date right now, so we're either going to go back to that or maybe go to the wiki inside of GitHub, and we really want to improve that documentation. So if you're not a coder but you think Hubble is awesome and you'd like to come help with documentation, that's also awesome. Or if you're a coder and you just want to help with documentation, we all know it's super useful, but sometimes it gets left behind from the more exciting things.
If I don't do any customization besides specify the configuration and locations and naming patterns of my hosts, how much do I get out of the box?
You get an incredible amount, actually, because like I mentioned, we have all those CIS profiles. We have a bunch of OS query queries. If you were to just install Hubble, let it look at its original location, which right now is GitHub, and in the future will be a public S3 repo that we're going to host just as a service to the community. If you just let it point to that default location, uncomment the schedule block inside of the config and let it run, then you'll get a lot of data. The biggest problem is you need a place to send that data. So you can run these jobs manually on the command line and just see the results and operate on those results if you want. But ideally, this is really designed to feed into another system. That system is usually an Elk stack, you know, Logstash or Splunk, right, or that kind of thing. So ideally, you'd have that kind of thing set up. If you don't, you still get a good amount. You know, the audit piece, Nova, will be the most useful to you because you can run that on the command line, just Hubble Nova.top, and it will just run all of these checks, and you can look for problems. You can look for those failures, right? And then you can fix those failures. The Nebula piece, just the problem with OS Query is that it just collects so much data. And so, you know, you're not going, that data is going to be useless to you without a tool to sift through that data. Right. So you could potentially, you know, it outputs in JSON. So you could just, actually, I think it outputs just in Python, REPLs by default, but you can actually have it output in JSON as well and then pull it into another tool that you can process that way if you don't want to use Logstash or that kind of thing. But yeah, all the stuff is there. You just have to figure out what to do with the data. And while the audit stuff is useful immediately, the rest of it is just so much data that you need some sort of other tool.
Okay, cool. And can you tell me how many people are working at Adobe full-time on Hubble?
So it's right now we have myself and I'm working full time. We have about half of one of my coworkers, Chad Mills. He's Matt Chills on GitHub. He has some other work that he does as well, but he works a lot on the Windows stuff for Hubble. And then he's you know, trying to break in. He's trying to break away from the Windows stuff a little bit and into the main Hubble stuff. So you'll see a lot of him. And then we also have a contractor named Paul Miller, and he is working full time as well. Right now he's working on some testing stuff. We're trying to buff up our testing and integrate with Travis CI and that kind of stuff. So you'll see a fair amount of him as well. So I guess we have 2.5 people right now that are working on it.
Okay. And that actually brings up a question that I forgot to ask earlier. So how comprehensive is your testing on this? And how do you test something like this?
So this is another place where I get to hang my head in shame. Because what are the first things that go when you are on a severe deadline? Ideally, it wouldn't be testing, but so often it is. Testing and documentation. And so those are the places where we've struggled. And it's bitten us in the past. And so right now, like, that's our big push. We just got out a new version, Hubble 2.3.4, which has, you know, some awesome new stuff in it. And now that we've done that and we have all that stuff for our security team, we're on a big testing kick. My coworker, our contractor, Paul Miller, is just like, that's what he's doing right now, is just getting us on Travis, getting some pilot stuff in place, and then starting to work on like comprehensive integration tests. Because, you know, we can do unit tests on specific small pieces, right? But really what we need is we want to test that when we run Hubble, Nova.top, return to Splunk or whatever, we want to test that from beginning to end that everything is working, because we've had issues in the past. So that's what we're working on right now. If you want to help with that, I can definitely hook you up with my coworker, Paul. But that is our primary focus right now, is to get code coverage and get, you know, real integration tests so that, and then as well as, you know, automated package building, because I've been doing a lot of that fairly manually. I mean, we use Docker to build our packages, but it still is, there's too much manual steps in that. So automation and testing is a huge push right now.
Okay. And now the next question requires you to do set math in your head. So think about all the things you wanted to talk about today and all the things we actually asked and subtract the two. Did we miss anything?
Oh, man, I think we've hit most of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay, good. And then my two standard questions, they usually follow that. I know the answer to the first one, which is, what is your favorite scripting language?
Python.
Of course, yes. And what text editor do you use?
Vim. I picked up Vim in, I guess it was in college. And honestly, I picked it up probably because it was like the harder choice, I feel like, to at least get involved in. And I just do that to myself sometimes. I'm like, oh, I just want to be different. But it turned out to be a great move, because I love that editor and it's great.
My first screen text editor was VI. So Vim didn't exist back then. That's how old I am. So it's like, but then I switched to Emacs. So I've been doing that for
Emacs
a long
is great
time
as well. Now. But yeah, I just can't get away. It's just muscle memory at this point. The Vim just has destroyed my brain. So,
well, I do remember what the keystrokes are, and I'm glad I do, because every once in a while I'm on a system that doesn't have Emacs installed, so I have to like edit a file, and it's good I still remember the hand motions to make for certain operations. I've forgotten most of them, of course, but all the important ones like substitute and things like that I can kind of get.
I recently switched to Colmac on my keyboard, and so that was definitely different, especially with Vim. It was very difficult to relearn that muscle memory, but getting there slowly but surely. But
And I've been actually pretty excited about VS Code, which is I'm hoping to get them on the show sometime soon, because it's a beautiful IDE and it works well with Dart and Flutter, and those are my big new projects I'm working on. So that's also another one that that's finally gotten me away from Emacs. That's how important that is.
They're really killing it over there at Microsoft. That VS Code is really cool. I have a lot of friends who are really digging it, and I have some other friends who are working on like their Python integration. And so it's a really cool project.
It even almost gets Perl highlighting correct, which is very, very difficult because Perl is so weird. And I'll say that as probably the number one author about Perl in the world. So, yes. Anyway, hey, it's been great having you on the show. I hope a lot more people start looking at Hubble for their monitoring needs and their auditing needs. And you've been very eloquent about it. So thank you for coming on the show and talking about this.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And that was Colton Myers talking to us about Hubble, Hubble Stack, whatever you want to call it, low salt Hubble, all of that. So, so what do you think there, Gareth?
I'm really excited about low sodium Hubble. I think it could change the world. No, seriously. No, Hubble Stack is really cool. It's a really interesting project. It's filling a niche that's desperately needed the last couple of years. I hope more and more people use it and contribute to it, and hopefully we will not see as many stories about massive exploits affecting massive amounts of servers and causing all sorts of havoc. So I'm excited to see where it goes. It's good.
And I'm going to have to dig up the name of that Docker static image analyzer, Docker image analyzer. What's funny about it, of course, is I wanted to play with it right after the show. So I downloaded the Docker image of the analyzer, and then I ran it on itself, and it had three errors. So it's like the Docker image they're providing had errors. Oh, well, it happens. It happens. Anything else before we move on?
No, I'm good.
Okay, well then let's go up with the upcoming guest list. We got React PHP next week, which is a low-level library for event-driven programming in PHP. RBSpy lets you profile Ruby processes that are already running, and it's lightweight because it's a sampling profiler. Keycloak gives you open-source identity and access management for modern applications and services. Oh, there's another buzzword winner there, bingo. Okay, Pillar Project. We are building the world's best cryptocurrency and token wallet that will become the dashboard for your digital life. Strong, bold claim. Let's see how close they get there. Just added to the list between the last time I was on this show and now is Frendica, which is a decentralized architecture with no central authority or ownership. Relationships can be made across any compatible system, creating a network of internet scale made up of smaller sites. That sounds like a lot of fun, actually. So, and again, I should actually say I apologize for getting sick last week. I don't have any control over that. So I'm glad Simon stepped up to be able to be the host for last week's show. Should have mentioned that at the top of the show, but there we go. You can find out all our upcoming people we're talking to at twitch.tv/floss. It's a spreadsheet for the show, or the homepage for the show. And from there, you have a link to the spreadsheet. If you have, again, other suggestions, please tell the project leader or the community coordinator to email me. My email address is on that page as well. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twitch.tv. Lots of frequent guests up there. Lots of frequent people in our chat room. Sorry, I'll stop bouncing around here. Hold on. If you're watching the video, you're probably sick by now, because I've been bouncing up and down for a couple seconds here. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and at Merlin on Twitter. I had a great time at the Red Hat Summit. Picked up some new potential guests, so hopefully we'll work them into the schedule. But I am going to be in coming up in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that. Well, June, whenever June is. Well, it's coming around, isn't it? So I'm going to be at in Salt Lake City at the Pearl Conference. So if you're in Salt Lake City, please let me know. Maybe we can hook up for a meal or something. I'm going to be in Norway on a cruise in July. And then back to San Diego. So it's going to be a couple of conferences. Well, one conference on a 15-day cruise ship, one conference, a 4-day low-carb keto diet conference. I get to see some of the people I really respect from online. Anything you want to plug, Gareth?
Yeah, I will be speaking at the Open West Conference in a couple weeks. It's happening in Utah, June 7th through the 9th. I will also plug SaltConf. So SaltConf is the yearly SaltStack conference. It's happening September, and I've lost the dates. SaltConf.com has the information for the dates, September 10th through the 13th. And I also wanted to mention this year we're doing a big push on for our diversity efforts. So we're offering diversity scholarships for anyone that qualifies and is interested in those. So all the information is on saltcop.com.
Cool. Well, Gareth, really thank you for providing your salt expertise to this show, because like I said, I only kind of know how it works, even though I'm tried to learn it more than once. well, and I actually started using it for the Insight Cruises machines for a while, but the strange syntax of the the templating language kept biting me up because I kept getting the wrong indents on things every time I was trying to play with it. So, you know, I'll pick something else. Anyway, that's enough of that. And we're out of time, so I should probably just start wrapping up the show. So, like I said, Gareth, thanks for being on the show.
Yep, thank you for having me, as always. Hopefully do a couple more before too long.
And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.